So, people try to understand the world, and using the gaps in their knowledge, they inferred that the gaps could be filled by a particular god. So it's the old argument of we don't understand how the sky, how the clouds, how the rain comes together. So it must be a rain god, must be a volcano god for why volcanoes take place and all this type of stuff. So the first thing I want to deal with is that, and then I'll deal with the other issues. So regarding the first point, what I'd like to say is some people in history, they may have done that. They may have had this view that, okay, I don't understand something, therefore God did it. However, to think that that is what theists in general believe, I think that's a hasty generalization. I don't think that's the case. From an at least Islamic perspective, we see nature as something that's harmonious with God. So we would see science as attempting to explain how the world works, and God is an explanation for why anything exists and why even the laws of nature and anything functions in the universe. So that's the first point. The second point that you spoke about rights. You see, if there is no God, there is no basis for rights. There is no morality. There is no good. There is no bad. There is no moral obligation. There's no ought. And there is ultimately no meaning, value, or purpose, including our very conversation right now. I could ask you, Jazz, why do you want to have this conversation? You'd say, I want to have this conversation because I want to find out what the truth is. But truth itself has no meaning, value, purpose, or any intrinsic worth, because ultimately there is no purpose behind anything. And the last thing which I wanted to address, which you were mentioning, is look, I totally agree with you that a conception of God, which is human, or which is a conception of God, which is in which God is like creation, right? Like a volcano, anything else within the universe. We do not believe in that. And that's definitely something which we would reject, because God is beyond our imagination, beyond our limited capacity to try and comprehend the divine. So what I'd like to ask you to do is to separate the negative experiences you've had with, say, a particular Christian like Kent Hovind, or certain things that you've seen, and just come to the question of God, and leave aside religion for now, or your negative experiences with religion, because you can believe in God and not believe in religion. I hope you appreciate that last point, because it's very important.
Yeah, I do. I do. I appreciate that last part. You can believe in God and not religion. That is exactly what I've been moping about for the last, God, 2.5 years. That is the exact point I've had. Jesus Christ. Oh, I did it again.
You do say Jesus, like so you've got a lot of Christianity, Christian remnants still left in you. So look, what I want to ask you is this. So let's just go with hypotheticals here, hypotheticals, and let's start, because sometimes in life you have to have a reset button, you have to restart again, right?
Of course, of course.
Yeah, so let's look at this. God is something that we can believe in without religion. Okay, that's there. Now, the idea that religion is man-made, I'm not going to totally challenge that idea, because we do have evidence that, firstly, it can't be the case all religion is true. However, I think, Jazz, what you need to do is you need to be open to the possibility that God may send revelation, may send prophets, and these things, they may be true. As long as there is evidence for these things, then we should always keep an open mind whether these things are possible.
Oh, of course, and I totally agree. The issue with that is said prophets. I investigate said prophets. Muhammad is one of the ones I'm currently on, ironically. Well, the question of morality, I've long passed that, and the question I've the things I've discovered is one, prophet doesn't particularly have to be the perfect man. Muhammad is the one of the things I appreciate about Muhammad is that he admits he is a man. He is not above or below anyone. He is a man. He is of you. He is not even sure of his own salvation, is what I appreciate about him. He doesn't make miracles. He's actually one of the most realistic prophets I can think of, because he admits his own morality, which is what I appreciate about Islam. But the idea that a prophet is going to be this loving and perfect person is infantile. It doesn't show the proper perpetuation of humanity, when humanity, I believe, is ultimately what's the word? With and is God. As I said, that nature, the na God is nature, God is omnipresent, God is everywhere, God is everything.
Yeah, that thing I don't believe. You know, this idea, and this is a sort of idea Einstein flirted with, that the laws of nature is God, God is within us, or God was this type of metaphor for all of reality. I believe that notion is no different to atheism. God is left to be nothing except a metaphor, but I believe in a God that is real and transcendent and beyond the universe. So look, I don't want to agree for the sake of agreeing. There are points that we completely disagree on, and that's one of the points that I do believe in something very different to what you're saying.
Yeah, sure. And like I was saying about the prophets, Jesus Christ and Muhammad changed the world. And I think if there was a God, he did want them to be here, because ultimately, I'd say that them coming into the world made the world a better place. Now, people in my circle will disagree with me, because they will immediately scream out, "Muhammad was a this that, and Jesus probably didn't even exist." I don't believe that. I believe that if there is a God, God sent these type of men who are imperfect, who ultimately changed the world, Muhammad, who created Islam, who managed to conquer the Middle East. I think that happened for a reason. It wasn't pretty, but it was something that a wise God would create, because ultimately, it did create a religion that, I want to say, in its early years, was pretty magnificent. And Christianity is exactly what you would imagine. Christianity is exactly what you need. Christianity is exactly the type of religion that invokes challenge and invokes morality and invokes meaning and creates life. To say that that life would be better without Christianity would be stupid. It would be off that stupid. That's what I believe a wise God would do, would create these religions to test human morality and create human morality. So I think we can both agree with each other on this part, that a wise God would bring these prophets around. The problem is that I don't know which prophets to believe. I could just go off the bat and say
Why don't you why don't you believe in all of them? Because that's what Muslims believe. We believe Jesus, Moses, Abraham, the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, them all. They're all prophets of God.
Well, the thing is that if you go back in history, you can see that Josephus talked about more than one version of Jesus. If you look back, there's a whole lot of gospels, and not all of them are on the same page. Even Muhammad, there is actually a lot of Qurans that don't agree with each other. There's verses that are missing, pages that are missing, chapters that are missing. So I can't confirm that these people even existed. And if they came in this time and looked into the Quran, I can't say that Muhammad would say that this is what he said, or this is what he believed. I can't say that, so I can't just go off the bat and say, yeah, they were all men of God. So it's really difficult for me. That's why I like theology. It tests the mind, and I enjoy it very much.
So about this thing about the Quran's preservation, there's this argument that people try and make that it's not preserved because there are verses missing, or there's verses that contradict, or chapters that are missing. And this is something which, of course, you're an academic because you're obviously very well read, and I'm sure you can appreciate that there's always a counter argument to these types of things. So I'll send you, and I'll put this in the description of this video as well, a entire lecture about the preservation of the Quran to show that that argument doesn't work. But one thing which I did want to say is, look, you said something about early Christianity, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this. You see, early Christians, they'd never had this united Trinitarian view, which contemporary Christians do. Their view, if anything, showed on the minimum they were confused about the status of Jesus. There were some early Christians who were very much like the Jewish people, and they believed in one God, and they believed Jesus to be a sort of Messiah, a sort of a messenger, but nothing more, not the Son of God, nor divine. And other Christian groups, they tried to make God the greatest, and Jesus being lesser than God, but still being divine in some way. Other groups, they made them equal. What makes more sense is the Islamic narrative, which is that these different groups, they disagreed with each other, but the earliest followers of Christ were not Trinitarians, were not people who said that Jesus is God. This was a much later invention.
Oh, yes, it was.
Yeah. And as you probably know, I mean, the Treaty of Nicaea and Constantine, and when they put together the entire Christian theology, it was cherry picking. They chose what was going to be accepted as the gospel, what was not going to be accepted as the gospel, and th this type of thing. So, look, the message I want to give you is, don't be, and I'm really happy that you see God as something separate to religion. So I'm really happy about that. But don't give up totally on the idea of religion just because of the bad practices of religious people. Try to take your time and look into the evidences for why people believe what they believe. And after this live stream, I'll try and get your email, and I'll try and continuous or correspondence that we can go back and forth in terms of the evidence of Islam. And Islam is a religion that believes that the evidence stands for itself. So we don't force people to believe, but we do believe there's evidence for Islam that's compelling for anybody that's sincere.
Oh, okay. This might be inappropriate, but it's completely heartfelt. What? Okay. Perhaps I've been poisoned by bad study, but I'm just going to go out there and say it because it's something that I need a Muslim to talk to me about.
Sure.
Muhammad, we can go back and forth about, some of the laws he broke. A lot of people I've talked to, including what's his name? Act 17 Apologetics, Dr. David Wood talks. You probably know him. He talks about
Yep.
Muhammad having sex with a prepubescent girl and having nine wives and saying you should drink dirty water and all these things that sound like a primitive man, not a prophet. I'd just like to know your opinion on what you believe was powerful about Muhammad. I mean, I know a lot about Muhammad. I know I can more or less reinterpret the things he does and make him a bit better than most atheists would think. But I just want to know your opinion on him.
Okay, very good. A very good question. So, look, we have to separate out the things which are false from the things which are true. So, David Wood says some things which are completely false and other things which are true. But let's stick with something which, in today's society, a liberal world order is completely unacceptable and completely uncomfortable for even Muslims, some Muslims, to talk about, which is the marriage of the Prophet, peace be upon him, with Aisha. Yeah, so he married her at the age of nine, right? And that age to be married, there's an entire argument which I'm sure you're aware of, where it's about that at that time life was, people used to get married at a much younger age, and in a tribal society, getting married at that age was completely normal. And look, I'll give you the argument and I'll tell you why I disagree with it. Okay? Not disagree with it, why I don't use it alone. Okay? So the argument simply contextualizes it. It shows, okay, so if you take a normal human being who kidnaps a child and then does horrendous things to the child, this is definitely not what happened, right? This is a case where it was a marriage and the marriage involved her father, and it was something that was well known, and it's nothing like that, right? However, we can contextualize it, and we can even contextualize it to the point that all of the critics of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, nobody raised the age of Aisha until the early part of the 20th century. Because for the vast majority of that time, for the last 1300 years, 1400 years, nobody thought of it as a problem until the 20th century. So that's the first point. But the problem is, the Prophet, peace be upon him, we can't simply say, it was okay for that time, but today we won't accept it. Because that's what the argument essentially is. The people who say, look, we can contextualize it, you're essentially saying what he did back then was wrong, but today, but so what we did today would be wrong, but in his context, that was normal, that was fine. I don't really agree with that way of putting it. The way I would put it is quite simply that it is something which we believe that he did that was right. And it's something which doesn't fit the fashion of today, the liberal order of today. But from an Islamic perspective, there is a huge benefit in him marrying her because she outlived him by decades and she became one of the greatest Islamic scholars in history. And there was not a day that went past except that she remembered, and she used to regularly cry about him. And she was not somebody, somebody they go through trauma or they go through something and they become like really secluded, and their personality breaks. She was somebody that after he died, she actually at certain points took leadership from the perspective of trying to sort out things. So there was a huge sociological benefit of somebody seeing the prophet and then outliving the prophet by a huge number of years. Now, some Muslims today, and especially Muslims that are brought up in the Western world, not really Muslims who are brought up in the Muslim world, even they are uncomfortable with this. So I'm sure even me explaining this to you, you may not be convinced. You may still say, this doesn't make sense to me. But my only other way of addressing that would simply be him marrying the Prophet, peace be upon him, marrying Aisha at that age, in no way would mean that the evidences for his prophethood or everything else that he achieved in terms of bringing the world closer to God, that he's no longer a prophet because he did that, right? If we just look at holistically his life and everything he achieved and all these things, and we look at the evidences for him being a prophet, him marrying her, even for a non-Muslim, I mean, for me, I'm totally comfortable with it. But even for a non-Muslim, somebody can't say, I'm not going to believe he's a prophet of God because I don't like this historical incident that took place.
Yes, and I'm a master of interpretation, and I'm totally on board with this idea. Actually, I thought I was the only one who believed it, but yeah, that's exactly what I was speaking. I'm really bad at explaining things, but yeah, this is exactly what I was talking about—the the idea of reinterpretation. What I notice a lot of atheists and a lot of Christian apologists do is use the fallacy of presentism, where you take today's ideas and you force them upon yesterday. For instance, they like to make out Abraham as a rapist for having Hagar and a deadbeat father for throwing out his son Ishmael. That's not fair because he wasn't because in those times, being with Abraham was a huge honor, and Hagar was very much appreciated. She was only left because of what God, because God asked him to. So I think for fallacy of presentism is something that atheists will often use. Reinterpretation is very important, and I know it's a lot of people, especially atheists, which I don't appreciate, will look at this passage like slavery in the Bible, slavery in Islam. They will look at it and say, how could God say slavery is okay? Well, if you think about it, God didn't say slavery was okay. God only allowed this because it was a unescapable fact of life. Slavery was going to happen. If you had war, you're gonna have people, you're gonna have to have slaves. It's an inescapable fact of life. And for this, atheists like Aaron Raw and possibly my idol, David Wood, don't seem to understand that it's the fallacy of presentism. There are things that had to happen, not that we wanted them to happen. If we had our way, they wouldn't happen. The other people like to call Muhammad a warlord. I don't see him as a warlord. I see him as a man who took a very small religion and built it up to an incredible feat. We can argue about morals and stuff like that, our proper procedure, but at the end of the day, the results of these actions were in the bigger picture better, and it was good. It created a religion that was more was well, I don't want to use the word authoritarian, but it was I remember there was a caliphate that said, "You don't have to believe me, you don't have to listen to me if I do not listen to God." And that's something I really appreciate about Islam, or because their matter of reinterpretation is better. The wife beating is what I it took me a long time to get past.
So can I explain that a whole idea of the wife beating thing? Yeah. So as a Muslim, I'm very uncomfortable with sugarcoating Islam. Okay. So I don't like to say, oh, because a lot of Muslims, not a lot of Muslims, but some Muslims, they do this. They don't contextualize. They actually outright tell lies, right? They're like, no, it doesn't really say that in the Quran. It doesn't really say this. The first thing I want to say is Aisha said the prophet was a walking Quran. So he was the Quran himself walking, that every action of his reflected the Quran. And every part of his personal life was actually recorded by her. And she was a brain box, right? And she recorded absolutely everything. And one of the things which is recorded by all of his wives and all of the people that interacted with him is that he never ever hit a woman. Okay? So this whole idea that Islam completely normalizes domestic violence is complete nonsense. If we look at the actual context of those verses are not you just beat up a woman, you just attack a woman, you just do any of those things. It's actually a lot deeper than that. And there's a lecture again which I want to share with you, which would really go through this, because if you look at the actual the circumstances and what's being said and the way it's done, it's not a beating, it's not a thing, it's completely blown out of proportion. And again, before the 20th century, no one had even tried to misinterpret this, right? And if anybody tries to say Islam is for domestic violence, then that shows that the Prophet never followed the Quran, because he had multiple wives and he never beat them, right? He never was violent. In fact, he said that once somebody did something and he picked up a twig. You know the twig back in the days, rather than a toothbrush, you had like a twig to brush your teeth with. It had like soft fibers and stuff. So he said, if I didn't fear God, I would hit you with this. Yeah. Meaning he was scared of even doing something like that. And something else happened, which is quite interesting. There was a companion, a disciple of his, who had a female slave. And what happened one day is he slapped the female slave and he felt bad. And he came up to the Prophet, and the Prophet got him to release this female slave. Okay, so in Islam, even this idea of slavery, and I'm glad that you understand the context, Islam didn't have this idea, you take a free person and you slave them. Islam had this idea of freeing the slave, reducing who can be a slave except for in war, and even the fact that slaves in Islam, we are told they're supposed to be wearing the same clothes as us, they're supposed to be eating the same food as us, they're supposed to be equal to us from the perspective that we're all slaves of God. And there's even a narration of the prophet where he says, do not say my slave boy or my slave girl, because you're all slaves of God. Yeah. So there's a lot of context. And you being a theology student, you would recognize that there's a lot more to what meets the eye. Hence why theologians, they can look at the world from a completely different perspective that everybody else looks at the world.
Of course, yeah. This is exactly what I've been talking about. And what I've taken to notice is where do I put this? When you look at things from a cultural perspective, you take that you put you don't you when you're a 21st century person, you're looking at sixth century Arabia. You would see a man screaming like a madman, probably suicidal, jumping, say, saying that demons are getting in his head and they're forcing him to believe that they're angels, and he's screaming and killing all these pagans and killing all these Jews for what? This is why I investigate miracles. This is exactly why, because when you look higher and when you look deeper into things, you can understand that I can kind of see where Muhammad was coming from in a lot of things. The one thing I cannot understand though is why he was suicidal. If you can answer that for me, that would be great. I can't understand the suicidal part because if it's my to my understanding, I might be wrong. I'm perfectly fine being wrong, but he was suicidal when he met Gabriel. He thought he was a demon and he tried to jump off a cliff. That is the part that I can't figure out.
Okay, so this is before he became a prophet that he supposedly tried to jump off a cliff.
Yeah, that's why I'm very careful about who I choose as who could possibly be a prophet. I don't know his fate, and I don't know his real.
Okay.
Is something I
So
really understand.
about this particular thing, I heard this before from Christian apologists and others. From an Islamic perspective, I do not know of that particular narration, but that's something that I'm simply going to have to plead ignorance, and I can research that and get back to you, but I don't have an answer at the moment.
Oh, that's fine. My point is that in theology, it's much more than worldview. It's much more than Pope reading Mother Goose. It's understanding the nature of God through human beings. But the problem with theology is that you're not sure who's hallucinating and who's having a real and having a real life experience. It's
Yeah.
like who's the person playing the Conjuring? Who's the actual and who's the actual person who went through it? You don't know who's who, and it takes years of investigation to figure out the thing with the thing with Middle Eastern prophets is that they're much more realistic. If you've taken a look and you've seen all other religions, you've seen they have deities. They don't really have prophets. They have Zeus. They have ridiculous powers. And from what I hear from atheists is that God just gets higher. Yahweh was a volcano god in the beginning. Then he became a sky god when we found out what volcanoes were. To me, that idea is plausible.
So about that, I study the philosophy of evolution, right? And this idea that we went from a lower god to a higher god, we started off with animism, then we went into this type of deification of nature, then God got higher and higher. this idea is challenged by anthropology. We actually know that monotheism preceded polytheism, and we had cycles of monotheism and polytheism, monotheism and polytheism. It wasn't simply the case that the world was first polytheistic, and then the god got higher and higher, then became monotheistic, and then the world would become atheistic. In fact, the opposite is true. If anything, we have a punctuated equilibrium in terms of anthropology. We have a lot of discrepancy according to that particular narrative. What I find about their arguments is that they make these superficial arguments, but the data doesn't support that. So if you look at ancient India, Indians today are largely Hindu. They believe in many, many gods. They believe in the mountain god, they believe in the tree god, they believe in the snake god, and all these things. However, ancient Hinduism was strictly monotheistic, right? They believed in one pure transcendent creator that was beyond imagination, which is exactly what Muslims believe, right? The other point which I wanted to say, if you look and you see a cult leader, you see or you see a Satanist like Aleister Crowley, and then you look at other religious figures in history, then you know it's a it, th there's a hasty generalization which atheism sometimes people like David Wood try and make, which is, you know, they're all crazy or all these people are whacked. In reality, we can see who's mad and who's truthful by looking at the evidence that they bring. So, for example, if you look at the life of the prophet, what did he do? He turned Arabia away from paganism to monotheism, and he created a world order which lasted 20 empires after he died. Now, how can a madman come up with a societal program, an economic system, a political system, a religious ideal, a spiritual path that can outlive him by that amount of time? It's actually a miracle from the perspective that if you're claiming that this person didn't receive guidance. On top of that, look at the things that the prophet said. The prophets made predictions about the future, which were later on confirmed. For example, I'm just going to give you one particular miracle. During his time, there were two types of Arabs. There were Bedouin Arabs and there were city dwellers. There were people who lived in cities like him, and there were other people who were Bedouins. He said the day of judgment will not come until these barefooted Bedouins, they're going to compete with each other in building tall buildings. Yeah. Now, what's really surprising is he could have said this about the Romans, about the Persians, about the Indians, about the Chinese, because the Bedouins, they were not even known to have fixed abodes. They used to travel. And the city Arabs, they used to have fixed houses, but the Bedouins didn't. Now, during the golden age of Islam and the Ottomans and the Umayyads and the Abbasids and the Mamluks, all these people, the Bedouins were doing the same thing that they were doing 1400 years ago. They were milking camels, they were drinking milk and eating dates and living in huts. And what happened is in the mid part of the 20th century, after the collapse of the Ottoman Empire, these people became super rich because of oil overnight, because they never knew, they weren't a civilization, so they didn't know how to spend their wealth. They just started vainly building buildings. And today, the largest buildings in the world are in the Middle East. The tallest building in the world is in the Burj Khalifa in Dubai. And once this building was complete, a rival building, a rival Bedouin family in Saudi Arabia, they said they're going to build a building of 1,000 meters, 1 kilometer. So this prophecy came true. Likewise, there's many prophecies that he made. He said in the future, no, it's not in the future. He said when people spread immorality through out of sex marriage, and they are like today we have this Tinder generation, and you know, people just having sex with each other. He said God will send down diseases that their forefathers have never heard of, right? And if you look at the large spread of STDs now and these types of things, likewise, there's lots of these types of prophecies, which of course I appreciate in a short live stream like right now, it's hard to digest it all. This is something I really ask you to look into, because this will show you he's not deluded. He's not a liar. He's actually a truthful messenger of God.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll certainly look into those things. Now, the atheist point of view is logical. Now, I don't want to use the word logical, because that would say that your view is illogical, and that would be unfair, because you certainly make compelling point. You certainly may believe right for me, but the meaning of life is something that will probably never be solved. But from my understanding is the meaning of life, there is no particular quote unquote meaning. It is your ability to understand, your ability to reproduce, your ability to eat. Human beings are infinitely needing, infinitely wanting. We're no better than just beasts, but we are beasts who are transcended and great. Being alive, being able to think, being able to understand is what makes our morals. It's what makes our foundation as social beings. You learn you should probably not be a jerk to anyone if you want them to like you. And our intelligence has transcended that simple idea of survival and family to significant proportions that have created cities and societies. That's the atheist point. That's the atheist point of view. Do I believe that? It's a little iffy, because I do believe that human beings, they have a deeper meaning to them, because we have discovered the world around us, and I think there's more to it than just a vast empty shadow. Because one, that would be depressing. Two, if then we weren't, I don't think we were put on this dot for no reason, because life is something that's almost incredibly, almost illogical to be alive. It's something that you can't create. It's something that has some kind of transient meaning to them. Even bacteria, as you said, it has to have some type of transcendent form to it. Even plants, they have some type of purpose to it beyond just their humble form. So, do I think that human beings are God made? Possibly. But I do believe that we have some type of I don't want to say meaning, but I do think we have some type of potential, some type of worth to our life. If I do say so myself, and that's pretty much where my beliefs have a halt for now, until I can understand theology a bit more. I'd like to know what your ideas on humanity's purpose is.
Sure. So I really appreciate you taking your time to explain to me your beliefs and why you're sort of in the position that you are. Now, about myself, the way I see things is, even if you don't accept Islam and you don't accept Christianity, you don't follow any religion, I think atheism, I do not see it as a logical position, because it is very difficult to accept. And even if you try and put on a secular hat, it's very difficult to accept that the universe, the biological design that's within us, that's within nature, that this whole system that we are part of, that all of this is a product of chance or necessity. Now, if we go back to Darwin is somebody who atheists champion as somebody who led us away from God in the biological domain. However, Darwin was never an atheist, and Darwin actually said that in my wildest fluctuations, I was never an atheist. When he published The Origin of Species in 1859, he believed in God. He didn't believe in Christianity. He left Christianity. He was a deist. And when he published his other works, he also believed in God. In the last 10 years of his life, he became an agnostic. And he became an agnostic because of the problem of evil and suffering. His daughter died at the age of 10. His son died at the age of 2. He went through a lot of health problems. So his atheism, sorry, his agnosticism was due to suffering and evil. It wasn't due to evolutionary theory. Additionally, he even said that although he became an agnostic, he didn't see evolutionary theory going against God in any way. He was very clear about this. So I think on the minimum, even if somebody doesn't accept religion, the idea that there is no God, it doesn't make sense. And it doesn't, not only does it not make sense from a logical point of view, but like you said, an existential point of view, from meaning, value, purpose, because we don't, as human beings, we're not happy and we're not content with, you know, food, sex, and holidays. Yeah, we actually care about the bigger questions. Why do we exist? What is the point of life? Now, the Islamic perspective on the purpose of life is our purpose is to love, put our trust and hope and fear and everything in God. And that is essentially worship. Worship is gratitude. Worship is singling out God to be the most supreme. And the very purpose of life in Islam is to worship God. And we believe as Muslims, as it says in the Quran, truly in the remembrance of God do hearts find peace. So when somebody remembers God, that's when they'll have true happiness. That's when they'll have true peace. And that's essentially the purpose of Islam, is not warfare, is not, you know, terrorism or you know, anything like that. The purpose in Islam is to get people away from materialism, get people away from this this attitude of making this life the be-all and end-all, and connect humanity back to their origins, back to their creator. That's the very purpose of Islam.
I see, and that's something I've always thought about Islam. You know, there was a time in my life where I would have turned my nose up to the idea that Islam was more than a primitive idea of wife beating and virgins. But recently, the theology has opened my mind up to this idea of gratitude and the God of gratitude. It's something really interesting. For waking up your consciousness, your life. Life is something special. It's able to think or speak or talk. It's something that almost feels like it has to be made by some type of more intelligent being. The problem is that when you go back and you look at science, science has an answer for most everything. It doesn't have an answer for everything, but it tries. And when I look in evolution, you said you were studying the philosophy of evolution. Evolution is a fact. It happens. We came from Homo erectus, Neanderthals. We are Homo sapiens. Everything came from something. Everything, even the world. And I don't believe in the Big Bang thing, or I think it has too many holes. I don't believe in it. I don't claim to think about it. But everything came from something. Every piece of matter came from something. I am not sure how everything came from the outer part of the universe, if there is an outer part of the universe. The idea that that this entire world that hasn't really changed much if you think about it, came from, I don't know, a small dot in the sky. That would make more sense than to believing there's an omnipresent, Christ, a God that created. You know, we gradually changed, we gradually grew, we gradually came from non-living matter, and life came. The problem I can't figure out is if that we're so great, why isn't there life on other planets, or is there life on other planets? These are questions that science tries to answer, but religion really can't. So religion, or the idea of God, it leaves a lot of gaps, and it leaves a lot of gaps because God is more of a principle. You know, it's more of a, it makes you feel higher of yourself. But if human beings are just animals, and the only reason we seek to create is to make ourselves feel superior, which is really what every animal wants, then, you know, we're really just intelligent beast. And that scarily makes more sense than me being any type of special, you know, because I just gradually came from Homo erectus, which was an ape. They made it with with Neanderthals, and here I am, a Homo sapien, fresh, ready to study the world. And the only reason I want to understand is because I want to be superior. I never want anything to have a leg up on me. And that type of philosophy is what challenges the bounds of normal idealism and normal religion. Because if you look at things from that perspective, then God almost seems unnecessary. It's like you don't need him because you already understand what you are. You're a beast. You came from other beasts, and the only reason you want to understand is because you are need to survive and be better. That idea is something that I've probably struggled with since I even started theology. Do you have any pro do you have you you've probably heard this before. Have you heard this idea before?
Of
That human beings are intelligent animals, and we understand and want things pretty much for everything, every animal. We want to survive, we want to eat, we want to be better than everything else around us.
so about this and just to give my perspective on what you're saying, firstly, if somebody was to accept Darwinian evolution and us having a common ancestor with a chimpanzee and even abiogenesis and coming from inorganic to organic, none of this, even if it was true, none of this would be mutually exclusive with God. So it's not the case that if you believe in Darwinian evolution, that that is incompatible, absolutely incompatible with God. Now, Darwinists today, like Richard Dawkins and others, they try and make that image, but Darwin himself saw that that wasn't actually the case. So I don't see science as something which is a rival to God or rival to Islam. I see science as God's book. So it's a way of understanding why God is worthy of worship for me. Because the more I study science, the more I look into the world, the more I'm reminded of God's signs. So science is an attempt to explain how the world works, but that doesn't in any way discount a designer or a creator. For example, it can be perfectly explained how me and you are talking. Like I'm right now in London, you're in the USA, and we're communicating via live stream. And we can explain this using, the live stream software, the satellites that connect us, internet, electricity, and so on and so forth. However, the explanation of that setup does not mean it was not intelligently designed, or there's no purpose or intent behind what we're doing. Likewise, science doesn't undermine the existence of God. And one of the issues is the very binary narrative that science undermines God because the more we understand about the world, the less we need God. I think both simply go hand in hand, and one doesn't undermine the other. You need science to understand how the world works, and God created the world. And, I just don't see them in conflict at all.
Well, I don't see them in much conflict, but the thing is the necessity of God, and the necessity of God is the well, first you have to go back into why people even believe there is a God, and the one of the things that people believe there is a God is because our need to understand things. And back to that point, I'm going to make it really quick because we already talked about this. Back to that point. If there is a God, what is his purpose? And what is your purpose? And what is purpose in the first place? The thing about it is that if you look at things from a more secular point of view, you'd probably realize that human beings aren't much better than the common. If they want to understand, they survive, they want to think, and they want to be better than everyone else. Aaron Ra brought this point up to me. Human beings.
Have you met Aaron Ra?
Oh, no, I haven't met Aaron Ra. That'd be a pretty cool thing to do, but you know, he brought this point up, but yeah, human beings are selfish. They need something to believe them. They need to be center of attention all the time. They need to be superior all the time, like most superior beasts are. And being superior, you need something to make you feel superior, and that's where God comes in. When you look at it from that perspective, it almost seems like God is the imaginary friend.
Yeah,
And we
but
and
the reason that argument doesn't make sense is from an evolutionary psychology point of view, there is no explanation for why human beings would invent such a thing, because all of our beliefs, so all of our emotions, like our feelings and also our beliefs, ultimately those are proximate mechanisms for survival and reproduction. From a purely evolutionary point of view, why would we come up with a concept of God? Why would we want to feel important? None of these things help us survive and reproduce. In fact, people like monks who go off and try and find enlightenment, or people who sacrifice themselves for God and they die in war, all of these people are not helping their survival and reproduction. So you see, Aaron Ra, I've actually debated him in the past, and when I get your email, I'll also send you the debates I had with him. A lot of these arguments that he puts out are extremely contradictory to what evolutionary psychology actually teaches. A lot of these things are baseless, and I've caught him out on this, where he basically makes assertions without any reference to what academics are saying, and in fact says the exact opposite of what they're trying to argue.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So let me get you a can you are you on your PC right now?
I'm on my phone. I have my I'm actually watching this debate from my iPad too.
Okay. Can you see the private chat in which I've just messaged you?
Okay, hold on.
I've said hi, email, question mark.
Oh, right. Did you send it to my email?
No. What's your email address?
Ianimate13@gmail.com.
So, sorry, say that again.
I'll just put it in the chat.
Can you just put it in the comments? It's really nice talking to you. It's about probably 4 o'clock in the morning now after we've spoken. So, what I could do is I'll take your email, I'll communicate with you the videos which I promised, the things on the prophecies of the Prophet, peace be upon him, preservation of the Quran, my debate with Aaron Ra, and a few other lectures and talks. And I'd like to bring you onto the live stream again, but this time probably to discuss one topic at a time, like God's existence, prophethood, each thing we'll do separately.
Okay, and I'll be prepared and I'll bring my events.
No, absolutely, absolutely. And I'd love to do that. And there you go. You've just sent it to me. That's perfect. So thank you so much for joining me on the live stream. And I'd like to thank all the people watching across the world. It was a very interesting discussion. It's early morning here in London, and it's in the middle of the night in the USA. So thank you again for joining. Is there any last words or anything you'd like to say before we end?
I probably prejudged you. Most athletes with and which I count top three have usually ended up yelling at me at this point. I've probably been called more godless heathen than I care to say. So this was a lot more refreshing than the average you're going to hell heathen kind of response I get, because usually it's not this much. Because usually it's not this detailed. So that's what I'd really like appreciate, a break from the bull crap. So thanks for that.
No problem. I'd like to speak to you in the coming days, and I'll be in contact with you via email. So thank you for joining us. For everybody else watching, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.